This week on Art of the Year features award-winning artist Anthony R. Brass, who is celebrated for his vibrant use of color and singular perspective. Next, the Barbara Friedman Poet Laureate of LaPorte County, Valerie Wallace, sharing selections from her debut poetry collection, House of McQueen. Horror spotlights on Canterbury Summer Theater's Murder at Howard Johnson's opening August 1st.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight from the Canterbury Theater once again to talk about what they've got going in their 2024 season. Of course, we have Ray Scott Crawford, who's the artistic director. And then we also have Garnet Breeze. She's the going to be Country Is director. And then we have David White, who's the senior designer tech director. Welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Hi.
Aloha. Welcome.
It is great to be here. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. I brought some special people with me today. You know, our next show up this summer is Country Is, and the director is Garnet Byers, and she's here. Also, I brought with me a guest from Louisiana today, David White. He is the technical director and designer for the last show, which is A Murder at Howard Johnson's. And David has been here for about, I would say, 18 years at the end of the season each summer, because he comes up from Louisiana to design and tech direct that last show. So I thought he could provide an insight today.
Tell us just a little briefly about yourself and then also approaching all the shows that you're designing for.
I am primarily designing and tech directing Murder at the Howard Johnson's. I've been, as Dr. Crawford said, I've been affiliated with the Canterbury for 18 years. I was a full company member in 2001, all those years ago. So I enjoy doing all these things for the shows. And in addition to scene designing and tech directing, I usually dip my hat into lighting as well. So it's a team effort.
What about acting, David? Have you ever been on stage?
I have. My first professional gig was at Canterbury. and the last thing I acted in was here at Bossier Parish Community College. I was Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof.
One of my favorite shows. I love that show. I always wanted to be Tevye, but I don't quite have the build, but I do have the heart of Tevye. So Garnet, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll just going to go ahead and move into the show that you're directing too.
Well, my name is Garnet Byers. I am from Detroit originally, and I am going to school at Ball State for directing right now. And then I will be directing Country Is next up in this season.
Very good. Tell us a little bit about the show.
Country Is, the music of Main Street is in concert, is just that, is a concert. It is a celebration of country music, I think is what I would call it most. We are hoping to build a good community experience watching this show, since country music in general is such a community-based art form. We'd love to build a wonderful show like that. So it'll be a concert more than a play necessarily, with a bunch of classic country songs, things like Dolly Parton's 9 to 5, 16 Tons, Stand By Your Man, Chicken Fried, and Boots Scootin' Boogie.
What is the set like?
The set will be fairly minimal. It is, at the end of the day, a concert. We want to make sure that the music stays most prominent.
Is there any collecting dialogue or any interaction like that, or is it pretty much just concert?
It is mostly a concert. There will be audience interaction, but there will be less interaction between the performers.
Well, Ray Scott, we're going to come to you. You have now a murder mystery. Tell us a little bit about that that's coming up for your final show of the season.
Well, it's Murder at the Howard Johnson's, which is particularly poignant for Michigan City because I believe they used to have a Howard Johnson's hotel, motel. But it's a silly little piece. It's three characters, a husband, a wife, and a lover. And in each situation, two of them are plotting to murder the other. So they go through three different holidays, Christmas, New Year's, and 4th of July, at three different occasions, and the tide has changed. I kind of refer to it as Agatha Christie meets Neil Simon. I think is a good way of putting it. I laugh every time I rehearse it. The lines are so funny. I think the audiences are going to love it.
I know. Doesn't it feel, it feels so good to laugh.
Oh, yeah. We need laughter. We need it. And, you know, if we get your toes tapping with Country Is, then we can make your bellies bounce with Murder to Howard Johnson.
That's fantastic.
Tagline.
You've had a pretty busy season with your previous shows. How have the attendance been? I know theaters have many times have suffered kind of the recovery after COVID, but tell us how Canterbury has survived that.
Well, we've built a little bit on our audience this summer. We've seen a lot of new faces, which is excellent. That's a great thing. I think we're doing okay. We, of course, can always use more, but we just closed Love is a Mini Splintered Thing, you know, at that point of the season. And we are just opening, starting now. And so we're building an audience, and then we'll hopefully roll that into Country Is and then Howard Johnson's. I know I dated this weirdly in terms of when it plays, but that's the sequence of shows for the season, and we've continued to build our audience with that.
Very good. So tell us a little bit too about, do you have any plans ever to, I know we've talked about this before, is doing a winter Canterbury? Is there anything in the works for that?
Well, I'm not really involved with the winter season. I'm strictly the summer artistic director, but I have heard tell of perhaps a children's production for, you know, by children, for not necessarily for children, but for their parents and grandparents. That's in the works right now. So we're looking forward to having Garnett's production of Country Is and moving into Howard Johnson's. David will be at the helm of the band that will bring the students up from Bossier Parish Community College and truck them into the theater. In 4 days, we'll put together a show and have it ready to go. Show dates. Country Is July 17th through 27th. That's a Wednesday matinees at 2 o'clock and Thursday, Friday, Saturday evenings at 6. And then Howard Johnson's, we don't have a Wednesday show. We just do August 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. And I believe the 1st and 2nd, that's Thursday and Friday, is a 7 o'clock show. And then we have a matinee that's Saturday because there's a boat show. Clear out so the people can watch the boats go by. That will end the season. And, you know, the number, it's 219-874-4269. Tickets are $20. We have senior discounts, military discounts, and student tickets at lesser prices.
Well, we appreciate you coming in on Art of the Air Spotlight Canterbury Theater. That's Ray Scott Crawford, Artistic Director, David White, the Senior Designer Tech Director, and Garnett Byers. Thank you so much for sharing your information about your show.
Thank you for another powerhouse season, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
And a Spotlight Extra. The Shirley Hines Land Trust Nature in Arts program has two free events. First, on July 20th with Lopesnik Center for the Arts, Wellness in the Wetlands at St. Francis Nature Preserve. And on August 3rd with South Bend Museum of Art, Leidick Bog. More information at hinestrust.org/natureintheArts. Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art in the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is Terry O'Reilly, host of Under the Influence, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Anthony Brass to Art on the Air. Anthony is an award-winning outsider artist celebrated for his vibrant use of color and singular perspective. He intertwines his passions of painting and music. His inspirations are derived from ecology, human experience, and our connection to nature. His work is in private collections as well as community murals. In 2019, he left his conventional job and traveled the art fair circuit. He delivers lectures, has gallery exhibitions, and a television feature, as well as earning numerous accolades along the way. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Anthony. It's really a pleasure meeting you.
Hey, you know, it's a great pleasure to be on the show. And thanks, Larry and Esther, for having me.
Well, glad to have you. Our audience wants to know what's your background, though. They always want to explore. I always call it your origin story, and how I tee that up is saying how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Anthony.
Yeah, so it's a long, really adventurous story.
Good. We love long stories.
Yeah, I don't know about adventurous, but yeah, ever since I was young, I've always been really involved and interested and fascinated in artwork or creating art and also making music too. But it's always been a passion for me to create. And so I've always just been making art, and I mainly just paint. And that didn't start till later on in my life. So after high school, I got some paints from my aunt, and I kind of just started experimenting with them one day and kind of just fell in love with the medium, and it came really natural to me. And so then, since then, I've just been painting all the time.
So what were those first experiments like? Because paint is, I think it's wonderful. So were you looking at images? Were you going to galleries and museums? How did you develop your eye for it? Because I think you need to have maybe that reference to paint. I mean, you paint really beautifully.
Well, thank you very much. I guess I've always been really fascinated in colors, and so I've always had I've always had a knack for colors, and I feel like where my work is now is just a culmination of all of my experiences and experimentations. I've always been fascinated with ecology and bugs, plants, being outside, really fascinated with the tiny worlds that really kind of pass our perspectives. And I'm always, I don't know, through that, I just have been able to harness all of my interests. And currently now I am able to use that knowledge and life experience to create the paintings I do now.
So, but did the elementary school or high school or middle school, did you have teachers that took interest in your artistic ability and maybe helped guide you with it?
Yeah, I've always had, my parents have always been very supportive and encouraging. My mom still has all my artwork at home. I think my parents have been the most encouraging in certain ways. I mean, they always have been, but they're kind of free spirited, and they encourage my creativity. I would play with my dad, and he had a great imagination. He would play with me growing up. And I just always had this vast imagination, and he helped foster that and help that grow. And, as a kid, I would get those giant reams of computer paper that used to be they all connected, and I would spread them all out and draw endless scenes of sagas of fantasy worlds or natural bug worlds or whatever. And they would just go on and on until I don't know, I couldn't stop. And so, yeah, I don't know. There's not one key moment. I guess the key moments were with painting was because my high school didn't have acrylic paint, or they didn't have paints to teach us with. So I just kind of learned how to paint on my own. But the one time I first experimented with painting was we went to the Detroit Institute of Arts senior year, towards the end of the school year. And we did an open painting class where we just had paints and we could just paint whatever we wanted. And that was the first time I was able to experiment with the medium. And once I picked up the brush and the paints, it just felt really natural to me. And I just felt I could just feel the potential right off the bat. And from there, I went home and I started using those paints, like I said, that I got from my aunt. And I would just paint all the time on my free time and just really experimented and learned and critiqued myself all mostly on my own.
Yeah, you can tell your careful observation of nature because it comes through in the sweetness of your paintings. There's such a lovely quality, especially when you're doing animals. Like your squirrels are just so delightful and those possums, you know, it's just your take on it is just really sweet. And that comes from really, I think, enjoying nature and observing it as well.
Yeah, I feel like that's with my artwork, it's a big thing where I gain so much joy and enrichment in what I'm interested in with like nature and all the beauty I see in the colors and the living organisms and stuff. And through my artwork, I try to collect all that and put it within a pigmented painting. Like I put it within a painting and I want to spread that appreciation I have for all these things with other people. And mainly I want to just uplift people through my artwork. So I use like these bright colors to kind of help push that vision forward towards other people and push those energies of colors into people's lives. Like even when I'm like sad or in the dumps, I'm always painting really vivid, saturated paintings that are usually happy. I don't know. I just feel like it's my my escape.
I love hot pink too, by the way.
It's my favorite color. I had a crayon. My first memory of like just really having a connection with the color was I was probably like 4 or something, but I remember being in the bathroom and holding this pink hot pink Crayola crayon and just like staring at it in the bathroom and just being in awe of how beautiful it was. But yeah,
Anthony, I'd be interested in your process. Like you have so much nature and things like that. Do you go out? Do you ever take like photographs of things? Do you go out and do a pencil sketch of what you want to do? Or tell us about your process in creating your work.
Yeah, so my process really is just the cornerstone of every painting is passion and excitement. So I only paint something if I'm really passionate or really excited about it. And I work on one painting at a time. And most of the time, they're just random ideas that pop into my head throughout any day. And when I get that idea, I call them like gifts. If it like gifts into my head, I'm like, oh, that's a cool idea. And I jot it down and write it down for later. And then I have like a long list of cool ideas I have that I want to experiment with. And then I'll just, when I'm ready to paint and I have time to paint, I will just loosely sketch. Sometimes I'll even just sketch it on like a sticky note, real quick, crude drawings just to get like the key, components laid out in the composition. And then from there, because I paint on wood, so I'll draw on the wood those key components, but then draw them out with detail and patience. And then once I have that foundation, which kind of guides me through each painting, I will just go ahead and start painting and picking colors out as I go. But really, it's always like I'll have the key parts drawn out, and then I'll have a few select colors that are going to be my featured colors. And then from there, I just kind of let the rest evolve as the painting evolves, with composition as well as with color. So say if I have like a yellow and green painting and I want to add certain colors to kind of make it more dramatic, I play around and compose these colors to pull the eye and the viewer in different directions and make things louder or calmer or more subtle.
And what about the size?
The size? Like
what determines the size? Do you know that from the outset, what size you're going?
I don't know. I think it just what determines the size is determined by what the subject matter is. I feel like a lot of times I paint real narrow, tall paintings. Mm-hmm. I paint a lot of trees, and like say if I'm painting a tree, just a singular tree with a bunch of birds in it, it typically ends up becoming calling for like a more narrow, tall painting. I have to force myself to paint landscapes because I feel like most of my paintings are portraits and oddly shaped ones. But I guess sometimes it doesn't really matter for the size, but oftentimes that's what causes that. And then I had the series where I call them my hiker series. And they're just about creating these micro landscapes and making them seem really vast and the viewer really small. So I'll have like massive mushrooms and blades of grass and fungus and bugs and like even like microbes and water droplets. And I like to paint those really big to kind of like help produce that vision.
Right.
Yeah. Because I'm always fascinated by perspective and I always like look at the ground and look at all the little bugs and crawling, and the longer you and the more patient you sit, the more life starts to move around. So that's kind of what I portray in that series, is try to convey that excitement that the little bugs on the ground give for me.
So what do you do alternate, you know, and I maybe it's not like this for you, but I go through periods where I can't work on my main discipline. And so I have to buffer myself in some sort of way before I get back into it. Do you have periods like that as well? And what do you do during them?
Yeah, I do. I wish I could just paint every day all day, but unfortunately you can't. But during those time periods, I feel like I just end up gaining more excitement to paint something. And it kind of fuels me to get whatever I'm doing done effectively. And that way I can get back to my actual work that I want to do. In those periods of time, it's, I don't know. Sometimes, like if I am painting a bunch though, I will kind of start to dry out and feel a lack of inspiration. And during those times, that's when I kind of like to revert and step away. And I don't know, maybe take a walk or dive into some other sorts of work. And then hopefully some ideas pop in my head and I can jump right back into it.
I like the fact that you work on one thing at a time. I wish I could do that, because then I would know that one thing would get finished.
Well, you're also a musician. Does your music, well, either inform or part of your process in painting, or is that kind of an escape from the one that, okay, this is my physical visual art and this is my music? So how's that interact?
Yeah, so they are both two very separate creative endeavors. My art is totally just me, where my music is, so I play drums in a rock band, we're called Panda House, and that is a different experience altogether. And they're both like almost equally passionate for both of them, almost equally, but like I was saying, my art is solely me, where my music is more of a collaboration. So I'm playing and creating along with my three other bandmates, and we're all writing something together, where a lot of times I'm trying to compliment and not step on toes, or then, I don't know. So it's more of like a team effort. And then the lyrics I don't really write, so the message isn't really up to me, but the rhythm is. And that's another thing too, is when I was a kid, I was always banging on stuff and I always had a rhythm. And so those are the two things I've always been passionate about, and I'm very fortunate to be able to do both of those at a consistent, so I can consistently play drums and I can consistently paint. So two of my passions that really fulfill me are always entrenched in my life very deeply.
Now, you also do murals. Tell us about your process with that, and also like where some of them are and how that came to be of you actually doing the mural.
Yeah, so my murals, they're just basically, so I do all my murals with brush, and I will like roll things, but I haven't done any massive ones, which I really want to dive into and do some massive ones on some walls, but they're basically just painting, just like I go at them the same as I go about any of my smaller paintings, but I maybe am a little bit looser, not less detailed in the sense of subject and stuff, but less detailed in the sense of patience for one specific element in the painting, because if it's this massive wall, I can't spend hours on just one little tiny section. So I just take it from the perspective of painting as if I'm painting small, but just use bigger brushes. And I always step back a lot too. And I feel like that's really important with my artwork, or any artwork, is I'll paint something and then always look at it from different perspectives and then keep kind of molding it almost like you're making a sculpture. Mm. So laying down the foundations and then slowly refining each little part until I'm happy with it. And you just kind of know, you're like, okay, that part's done, or that part needs a little work. And some of my murals, I don't have too many, but my favorite ones are at this Hamtramck Sound Studios, which is Hamtramck, if you're not familiar, is just a city within Detroit. And there's this really cool recording studio, and I paint it in their hallway in the recording studio in the bathroom. And there's really tall ceilings, and it's this big micro landscape where it's this tree and mushrooms and giant bugs. And it's just, and then in the bathrooms, all these dinosaurs. That. So it's really almost interactive, and I try to take people into different worlds with my art, because that's where I feel like I'm taken when I kind of explore and with like explore outside, or like, I don't know. Yeah.
Do you like to do commissions?
If it's
I know that's a dangerous question. I would say, do you do commissions rather than
do commissions? My favorite commissions are ones where they're just like paint whatever. I do like commissions oftentimes, which is maybe like a fortunate thing, but I don't really have too much time to do commissions, because I'm usually trying to keep up with
your show circuit.
Yeah, my circuit. But when I do commissions, I have done Mindset Herbs, which is this company. They're newer, and they sell marijuana, and they use my artwork for all their packaging. So I did 9 paintings for them, and they're just slowly releasing them. They're not in stores yet, but that was a really fun experience. And then I've done a lot of different commissions, and I do stuff for bands. I do stuff for bands, like t-shirt artwork and different things like that. In my band, I do all the design work.
I was curious what you did before you started doing your art full time.
Yeah. So, my main thing was I was installing gutters and doing siding and stuff. And I was doing that for maybe about 6 years, but I've always been hustling and bustling. So that was like my main thing. And then in 2018, I kind of got my feet wet doing like 4 or 5 shows before I quit my job, just to see how I would do in it. And then it showed a lot of promise. So the next following year, I quit my job and did art fairs full time. And that was 2019 when I went full time. And since then, I've been full time artwork.
So what is your month like? Are you doing a different show each weekend? You know, because I know you have to plan in advance for them, because some of those applications are, you know, way in advance.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just got done with a Talbot Street Art Fair in Indianapolis. I go through stretches of like 3 to 4 shows, and then it's almost every weekend. And then it kind of slows down in the fall and then up until after Christmas. And then I kind of spend the few months just focusing on new work. And then it starts back up in May. So it's a really busy time. I never have time for much.
Yeah.
Is there a favorite place you like to go to an art fair, or a favorite art fair you have?
Ooh, I don't know. I have
there's a lot.
I have a lot of great ones. I went down to Florida a few years ago and spent 2.5 months in my van doing art fairs down there. And that was great to get away from the cold Michigan weather. I would like to do that again eventually, but next year I'm mostly regional in the Midwest, but next year I'm going to try to venture out a little bit more. Me and my farthest show this year is the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and then I'm doing St. James Court in Kentucky.
You know, there's some great shows in Wisconsin, the Madison one and the Milwaukee one, both really good.
Yeah,
both
definitely.
Really good.
You're right about that. I'm going to apply to the Madison one next year and hopefully get in.
Oh, yeah. It's excellent.
And we have one here in Chesterton. There's the Chesterton Art Fair, and then Lobeznik has an art festival also in Northwest Indiana here. So there's a couple of them down this way if you ever kind of think out getting down this way.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, about 2 minutes left, and we want to give you a chance to tell us how people can find your work online, some of the art fairs that you do have coming up. I know July 18th and 20th, you'll be finishing up when this show airs. That's the Ann Arbor Fair. But tell us about some of the things you have coming up.
Yeah, so my band just released recently, EP. But so you can find my band Panda House on any of the streaming platforms, and you can find any of my artwork information. It's all on my website at Anthony R. Brass. That's Anthony R. as in Robert Brass.com. And then all my social medias are that same thing. So it's all based on my name. And you can find me there. And shows I have coming up, I have one basically every weekend, mostly in Michigan. And yeah, all the information about that's on my website.
Real quick, is there a subject you haven't painted that you'd like to paint that's kind of on your wish list?
Ooh, I have just a big list of cool ideas that I want to try to create. And they all kind of just involve nature and stuff. I don't like painting straight lines, so I don't know. I guess there's not anything other than the ideas I have. I'm going to paint a giant desert landscape in a terrarium. That's one I want to get into, but we'll have to wait till I get time.
Sounds like fun. Well, Anthony, we appreciate you coming on the show. That's Anthony Brass. You can find him on AnthonyRBrass.com. AnthonyRBrass.com. Original paintings, prints, murals. He also has a thing for commissions, and you also can check on his show link plus his music. Anthony, thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air and sharing your art journey.
Well, yeah, thank you guys so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was great.
Art on the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com. Did you know that you can also listen to Art on the Air anytime as a podcast at Lakeshore Public Media's website, through Lakeshore's app, or from NPR? Plus, it's available on demand from your favorite podcast website, including TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, and many more. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. We'd like to thank you for listening to Art on the Air. Our show relies on the support of not only our show underwriters, but also our listeners who make donations to this station. Your support of this station will ensure Art on the Air may continue bringing you the best of the arts and culture programming for Northwest Indiana and beyond. If Art on the Air is important to you, please consider supporting this station with a one-time contribution or even making an ongoing sustaining contribution. For information on how to make a contribution, go to this station's website or our show website, breck.com/AOTA. And thank you.
This is Curtis L. Chrysler, Poet Laureate of Indiana, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM. And on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Valerie Wallace to Art on the Air. Valerie is an award-winning poet and author. 2018 saw the birth of House of McQueen, and 2011, the chapbook, The Dictator's Guide to Good Housekeeping, was available. She served as an associate editor and webmaster for Rhino Poetry from 2009 to 2016 as an advisory board member of the Afghan Women's Writing Program. She won the 2012 San Miguel Writers Conference Poetry Prize, and her work was chosen by Margaret Atwood for the 2012 Addie Award. Her work has been supported by various grants and fellowships. She earned her MFA from the School of the Art Institute. Valerie is the first and current Barbara S. Friedman LaPorte County Poet Laureate. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Valerie. It's very nice seeing you again.
It's great to be here. Nice to see you, Esther. Nice to meet you, Larry.
Nice to meet you, too. Well, and our audience always wants to know about your background, what I call your origin story. And I always say it like, how you got from where you were where you are now. So let us all hear about Valerie.
Well, let's see. So I grew up sort of a peripatetic childhood. We moved about I don't know, a lot of times I went to 7 schools before high school. And so I think, you know, my constant was books. So I was a shy kid. So I read a lot and started writing, you know, then. And then I know you don't want me to just skip ahead to college, but really.
So what were you like those? What were you writing about? I know, like, being the new person in school all the time is, you know.
So. Yeah, I wrote a poem about a tiger and when I was a freshman, and to my horror, my teacher read it out loud to everybody. So then I felt like the whole school knew I was a poet. So then I just did it. Yeah. I didn't take a poetry class until after college. So I got sort of sent to a little Lutheran college in Kansas, which turned out to be a great fit for me because I got to do a lot of extra things. I took art classes. I played my cello in the orchestra. I didn't major in anything to do with the arts, but it was a big part of my life. And I resurrected the poetry magazine there and the contest. And I don't know why it never crossed my mind not to major in English or something to do with the arts, but I didn't. And I had an opportunity to move to Chicago during college. So that's when I really, really started writing for myself. And I remember being on the bus, the number 6 bus in Chicago, and reading Yusuf Komunyakaa's Facing It, and just being astounded by the turn he does at the end, and writing it in my notebook. And I remember being in the seminary co-op bookstore and picking up Elizabeth Alexander's, I guess it was her first full-length book, and I was just astounded. So I was working full-time, and again, it never occurred to me that I could have a job being a writer or a teacher, but I took poetry courses during the summer. You know, I went to a lot of different places. And poetry was very good to me. You know, I got to go to the Hamptons. I got to go to Italy, Mexico, and a lot of places. And I just fell in love with it. And I got to take courses in Chicago. Then I thought I might as well get my MFA. So I did that part-time and just kept working. And so now I can teach poetry. I really love to run workshops, and I love to attend readings and go to readings. I love reading new poetry, anything to do with poetry. I mean, even bad poetry, I love it.
I know. So has that always been, have your words always come out in that poetic form, or you also do write stories? Did you journal or keep a diary, you know? So what other, you know, what was your writing?
Just always poetry, basically. I kept a journal really young because I thought that was the thing to do, but yeah, I found a short story I wrote when I was a kid, and I think that's the last time I wrote a short story, really. So it's just something about the art form, the compression, the intensity of the language, the tricks you can do with it. The different voices, the different styles. There's something about it that to me is, it's not magical, but it's akin to that. It's magic adjacent.
It is. Especially, you know, I find, and I don't know how you arrive at the poems, whether you're walking and all of a sudden, boom, there it is, or if you need an actual, you know, you see a visual and then there's the poem. I mean, I'm sure it's a combination of everything, but I find the magic, you know, it's like when I write a poem, it's, you know, there it is, but the magic sort of happens in the editing and the culling of, you know, the language and the adjusting
the language. Like the bones are there, but the magic happens in the forming of all of it. How is it for you?
I think the magic for me really happens when I'm reading a finished poem and there are someone to hear it. But I do know there's a very stirring feeling, you know, a sort of intense pleasure when you've got it, when you're just about getting the right words, just about done, I should say. I prefer prompts. I think that makes things just so much easier. But when I'm editing, I can sometimes leave my desk and go for a walk, and I'll take paper with me. I'm very old school that way. And then I can jot down something if it comes to me.
With House of McQueen, which I adore the fashion. So I was thinking about did the poems come to you more vividly when you watched the runway show as opposed to looking at a static photograph of the fashion that you were writing about?
I'll just explain, is a big project. So I was not at all interested in fashion. when I started it, I very much respect it now as an art form, but I didn't know about Alexander McQueen until he died. And I read about his work and thought it might be something I'd like to try to put to words, to make a poem and see if poetry could speak to his enormous well of creativity. And so I did watch a lot of the runway shows because you can see them online. So I got the idea to write in his voice, and then I got the idea to write in the voice of different dresses and different designs.
Yeah.
And so after I had 15 poems or so, I thought it might really be a book. And then I was filling things in. So I tried to do some narrative things. And so I guess to answer your question, depending on what poem I was working on, I would go to different sources to see what I needed, needed to feel, or what I needed to see.
Question I would have for you is, someone may be interested in writing poetry, and you say you do workshops and structures and teach it. What are some of the basics that you give them to do that? I mean, what you lay out is, and I realize poetry is so arts, so many different structures, but tell me, how would you give the advice to a budding poet?
Mm-hmm. Well, a budding poet is probably already a poet. So we might look at what they've already written and see which part has the heat, you know, where it's starting to lift off the page and go from there. But specifically, I think it's so helpful, just like with visual art, to go look at the masters and the craftsmen and craftswomen who do it so well, and see, you can really figure out how it's done, because it does feel like a poem might be having this unexpected magic, but it isn't. Some of it is using a thesaurus, not, you know, getting away from cliche. And some of it is just thinking really hard about what the poem needs. I don't know. Does that help?
Oh, yeah, it does. I think it's interesting how the process goes there.
Mm-hmm. So, I was just going to say, sometimes free writing can be really fun because you don't know what you're about to write. And if you're just given the opportunity without distraction to write on demand, if someone is telling you you need to write for 5 minutes, and maybe they tell you write about the color blue, or write about write about a childhood friend. Like, it could be a prompt, but it could also just be write everything that you're just write. And often a phrase comes out of that you want to build on.
Yeah, I think prompts are so interesting just for that reason. They prompt your brain
yeah.
to head someplace yeah. that you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
So we just talked about House of McQueen. Can you read a couple of poems from them?
Oh, maybe sure.
Start with Council House 1972, and then let's make a dress from these after
okay.
that.
Okay. So Council House 1972 is the first poem in the book. And, you know, he lived in London and he lived in public housing. And so this poem happens. It is it's my introduction to the book, and it has an epigraph in it, which is from an interview. And this is a way too long introduction for such a tiny poem. But I just wanted you to know the first line of the poem is actually part of an interview. Council House, 1972. When I was about 3 years old, I drew a dress on the wall. And what dress was it? Cinderella. When she turned, I'd never seen anything like it. Dress made for charming prince and fairy. I could manage the little sleeves, tiny waist rising out of skirts, which laughed as they traveled with her across the ballroom floor. And they had stars woven in them. I got caught wondering how to draw that color, seacoast changing to dawn. There was trouble, but I didn't care. I knew it was the dress that saved her. All the rest was just a story.
You know, Valerie, it's like the part that was so evocative to me was you writing seacoast changing to dawn. That's so exquisitely beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. This was that was a fun poem to write. So was this one. This one is after a specific dress, and it apparently Alexander McQueen came across, I can't remember where, some red medical slides. You know, one time he burst into the studio and with a bunch of seashells, and they made a dress out of that. But this time he came in and said, let's make a dress from these. And they were these glass medical slides. And they did. There's a gorgeous dress. It's from his Voss collection. And this poem is a form called the haibun. So it's a Japanese form, and the top is a little bit of a prose poem. And then there's a sort of straighter poem underneath. Looks a little like a vase, I guess, or something. Okay, let's make a dress from these. Stained red medical slides layer vertically on sleeveless sheath, high-necked and cut away from right shoulder to right hip bone. Heavy overskirt of crimson, ostrich feathers swish and switch, thick and deliberate into plum black feathered underskirt. They obey the law of push. From the slightest pressure, they bloom. Interpreter of alarm, lover of syringe and tub water, tongue at your throat, 1,000 thin clappers, summon the carnal bell, raucous rouge, smudge of poppies, murder of crepuscular roses, so juiced they vogue, rubies strewn on scarlet carpet, you stare, there is fire racing under your skin. Twin to Eros, close your eyes to see me, repeat me to feel me. At the end, I go quietly. I take you with me.
You know, reading or listening to that particular poem gives me the uneasy feeling I've witnessed something I shouldn't have.
I love it. That's great. Thank you.
It's just, yeah. You have the way you use language is just so beautiful.
Picture is important. You know, I just had another thought that answers part of Larry's question. And I'm sorry it took me this long to think of it. But I have to tell you that my grandmother was a seamstress. And I am sure that part of that life with her influenced the writing of this book and my attention to texture and detail and color and shape and proportion. I just thought of her and yeah.
Do you have a specific time that you write? I must write so much this day, or do you work just from an inspiration? I mean, you know, some writers say, okay, I need to put in so many hours a day to be a writer, and that may be more for prose, but tell us about that process.
I think it's really smart to say you're going to put in so many hours a day or so many minutes a day. And I don't. I do try to reserve time about once or twice a week in the mornings to write. I think it's really helpful to just sit down and write no matter what, a little bit like free writing does that. But if I have a project to work on, I'm a lot more interested in sitting down to write. It's not really fair to the writing process, but that's the way it is, I guess.
Could you take one more selection for us, if you would, please?
Oh, sure. I brought a poem that I wrote about a place here in Indiana near where I live. It's called Barker Woods. And you can just go into this little wooded area and walk for free. It's just great. I love it there. Here it is. Barker Woods. There should be a name for the taking inside when you walk in a forest. So many leaves releasing for any who stills there to breathe in and swallow the rain's odor, the muddy, musty petrichor, fungal isoprene of beech, of pine, of oak and its tundra, damp, volatile, and thrilling. I was raised to fear walking alone in the woods, to answer the forest's burlesque with a curse, to hide decay. Perhaps holding on to suspicion, the cells that ripen already an inscription. But widening the breath is like widening the gaze. I do not understand how it is sinister to step closer to cold and leaf, slime and mushroom and moldering. Who are we to fight against anything that saves, to close our eyes as what happens next overtakes us?
It's the way I feel about the forest, the forest's burlesque. It's such a happy, fun, delightful word.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, there's this Japanese concept called forest bathing. And I found that actually the forest releases chemicals that help you fight strengthen your immune system to fight disease when you're doing forest bathing.
And also I've read about what's called grounding, where you go barefoot and you need to touch the ground sometimes to feel grounded. There's a certain actual like a magnetic and or electromagnetic feeling about that.
Yeah. I think it's really fun to write about the natural world and how it keeps invading our lives at the molecular level, not just, not just something pretty to look at.
Yeah. Yes. I removed a tick yesterday from my leg. So yes, the natural world
definitely invaded.
Is there any topic that you have not explored with poetry?
Any topic I have not explored?
Right.
Well, tons of topics.
I would like to.
One of the things I want to do is, with my poet laureateship is take some time to learn and write about the places and people in LaPorte County. So I'm looking forward to that, visiting the History Museum and getting to know people.
Okay. In our last minute here, tell us a little bit about being poet laureate. And of course, this will air in July, but any future things that you'll have doing that?
In the fall, I'll be conducting workshops in libraries throughout LaPorte County. And hopefully there'll be some readings with other poets happening. And also, I might just be squirreled away in my office writing. Yeah, I hope to really be promoting not only LaPorte County, but providing poetry and amplifying the poets who are already here.
So that'll be your mission.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. That's Valerie Wallace, who is the Barbara Friedman LaPorte County Adult Poet Laureate, and sharing some of her previous work there in House of McQueen, which was published March of 2018. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air.
Thank you both.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, Valerie.
Coming next week on Art in the Air features artist Blake Gore, who uses 0.15 pen nib that creates minimalist canvases with an eye for detail. Next, textile artist Shani Solomon, who creates unique, handmade, one-of-a-kind wearable fiber art using the finest silks and textiles. Our spotlight's on the 65th Annual Chesterton Art Fair coming August 3rd and 4th at Dogwood Park. We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art in the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther. I'm